There's been a big drop in the number of people going to emergency departments across the country with problems not related to COVID-19. EDs are open and are operating as normal, and doctors are concerned that some elderly people in particular are coming too late for what could be life-saving treatment, especially if they might be suffering from a heart attack or stroke. The warning comes as people who are more vulnerable to the effects of the virus and all people over the age of 70 are trying to adjust to staying at home and cocooning. The Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Houlihan, said he thought the over 70s understand the restrictions of cocooning and why they exist.
For the most part, our sense is that there's a very high degree of compliance. In fact, a lot of the anecdotal evidence is suggesting that long before we recommended that measure formally on Friday night, that many people over the age of 70, in particular many people with the underlying conditions that we've identified for cocooning purposes, were already in fact practicing that. And we will, through the market research work that we have in place, measure that and attempt to try to quantify what the actual level of compliance is in relation to that. We know that that particular measure of cocooning is a very hard and difficult measure and challenging measure for people. For people over the age of 70, it's effectively asking them to cut themselves off from their wider families, often from grandchildren. That's a really hard thing for people to do. It's a hard thing for us to ask. And so we held that measure until we felt we'd arrived at a point where we now had to ask more.
That's Dr. Tony Houlihan speaking last night. Let's talk to Dr. Fergal Hickey. He's a consultant in emergency medicine at Sligo University Hospital. Fergal Hickey, good morning again.
Good morning, Gavin.
We'll talk about emergency departments in a moment, but just to pick up on that point from Tony Houlihan, a lot of particularly healthy over 70s who are feeling very cocooned, very stuck, who want to go out for a walk, for example, feel that, particularly for those who live out in the country and think, well, look, you know, I'm not going to see anybody and nobody's going to see me. This is very challenging for them.
It is, but I think we need to see it in the context that the median age for those that have died of this illness is 86. So these are people who, by and large, are elderly, many of whom have underlying medical conditions. So the advice has been offered because it's the appropriate thing to do. And Rachel's interview with Professor Philip Nolan just now shows that we are succeeding in what we're trying to do as a society, and there is a price to be paid for that. And unfortunately, that price is cocooning and social isolation. But our difficulty, I think, is the fact that some people have taken this too far. In other words, that they have come to the conclusion that they are now acutely unwell, have symptoms, and they are precluded from seeking help. That is not the case. The ambulance service is available on a 24-hour basis as ever. The general practice service is available, and emergency departments are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And all of those organizations have made that clear, that we're still there to serve the public in their hour of need, should they need it.
Are you seeing people delaying coming to hospital with heart attacks and strokes?
We are, particularly with strokes, and again, this is a condition which typically affects older people, so we're seeing people who are turning up the following day, where the time window for treatment is a matter of hours. So we need to be very careful that we don't, by our advice on cocooning, we don't give the impression that if you have a medical emergency, you're not to do anything about it. The opposite is the case. If you have a medical emergency, then treat it as a normal medical emergency. If you are well and do not have symptoms, then you need to follow the cocooning rules strictly.
I suppose there is an argument that people are worried about coming to hospital and catching the virus, and people are also worried about coming to hospital and being alone and not being able to have their family there to comfort them.
And there are legitimate concerns. All emergency departments currently are operating a streaming system. So we're trying to separate those that might have COVID-19 from those that don't. So insofar as we can, we are trying to separate these two streams. So I think that should reassure the public that we're very much aware of that. And in many cases, we have taken over other parts of the hospital, such as parts of adjacent outpatient services, so that we can try and distance the two streams from one another. And many hospitals have had to do a phenomenal amount of maintenance and building work to actually facilitate that in a matter of days. So I think we can reassure patients about that. What we can't reassure them about is the fact that the issue of visitors. We cannot have visitors in emergency departments or in hospitals in general, except for end-of-life care, and even then under very restricted circumstances. It would be bad enough for a person to die, but if they ended up being the vector of transmission that affected, infected, or killed other people, then nobody would want that. So I think people need to understand and appreciate that the visiting rules are there for very good reason. They're there to protect the public and staff, but primarily to protect the public.
I've heard doctors, not just yourself, speaking over the last number of days, wondering about where all the new cases of diabetes, of cancer, of mental health illnesses have gone, that people are not coming to see them, and they're worried about a build-up of problems in the community that may go unseen, untreated, and there may be a time bomb of medical problems out there.
And that is certainly a risk in the current climate. I mean, we know there are certain conditions we're likely to see less of because of the social distancing and the absence of outside gatherings, the absence of pubs, clubs, and so on. So we're seeing fewer assaults, we're seeing fewer injuries, we're clearly not seeing sports injuries, we're not seeing much gastroenteritis because that would be typically spread in schools or in creches from one child to another. So there's lots of things we're not seeing, and we're not seeing them for obvious reasons. But we do have a concern, all of us have a concern, that the conditions which turn up every week are not getting to hospital where needed. Now, some of these, as you know, may well be able to withstand waiting a period of time, but if you have a heart attack or a stroke, or if you have severe abdominal pain, severe chest pain, they're not things which can be left, and it's really important that people respond as they normally would by calling their GP if it's lesser severity, and if it's a greater severity, dial 999 or 112, and they will be dealt with, and they will be dealt with in the local emergency department.
I know this isn't your area, but I mentioned mental health illness and perhaps the build-up of it behind closed doors at the moment. It's often a difficult issue for people to go to their doctors about, but it's also an issue that perhaps is building up given the level of anxiety that are in people's homes at the moment and in people's lives about this illness.
And there is no doubt that that is a risk as well. Certainly locally, our mental health service has ensured that it has set up a parallel service that doesn't involve the emergency department, where they're providing a service for people who need it. And I suspect that is being replicated elsewhere in the country, and GPs will have been made aware of how they access the service. So the services still exist. They may be configured somewhat differently. They may be in a different building. They may involve different arrangements than normal, but they still exist. But there is no doubt that the more long-lasting this lockdown, if you want to call it that, is, then the greater will be the mental health impact on the community.
How are you and your colleagues getting on in Sligo?
Well, we've spent an enormous amount of time over the last few weeks contingency planning and rejigging our service. So outside our front door is now a large prefabricated building, so we can triage people, and that will be probably commissioned in the next day or so. I mean, what we've found is people have worked together and worked together really hard to develop pathways to try and deal with this issue. I mean, the hope is, and the evidence Professor Nolan gave earlier, the evidence seems to be that we are having some success flattening this curve. The flatter we can make it, then the more our efforts will have borne fruit. And I think it's really important for the public to appreciate that this is their work. I mean, they are taking the advice on board. We've certainly seen it locally, that people have taken the advice on board, and people have been very good. And signs on, we haven't had the significant number of cases in Sligo that they've had elsewhere in the country, but we continue to plan, we continue to make contingency arrangements in the expectation that the peak of this is likely to be in a few weeks' time.
Fergal Hickey, emergency consultant at Sligo Hospital.